RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
This is CX of M Radio, the voice of customer experience professionals.
Welcome to another World of UX podcast. This is your host, Darren Hood. Thank you, everyone, for taking the time to join us again on today. And as always, welcome, special welcome to all of you who are joining us for the very first time today. We are continuing our series this week where we're looking at the UX job landscape and everything connected to it, whether it's recruiting, finding jobs, managing teams, maturing teams. And today, we're going to venture out a little bit more with my special guest today, and I'll let her introduce herself here in just a moment, Stephanie Valter. Ah, I got it right, didn't I?
Stephanie. You get the German version.
yes. I'm going to have Stephanie go ahead and introduce yourself, Stephanie, and then we're going to dive into our topics and people will see how we're going to branch out a little bit differently today because she's an educator. So we're going to look at this from a little bit different angle today. And I think this is great and much needed. But Stephanie, take it away. Tell everybody who you are.
Yay. Hello. Thanks for having me again. Yes, always absolutely. Super fun talking to you. So yeah, I'm Stephanie Walter. I'm a UX designer, UX researcher, and I live and work in Luxembourg. I'm currently specialized in enterprise UX, which means I get to design tools that are used by internal users within the company. So no marketing annoying me at the moment. But I got like 100 problems, but marketing is not one of them at the moment. But yeah, that's basically, I'm French. I used to work also in Germany, France, and yeah, no, Luxembourg is quite cool.
Awesome. So very happy to have you. If you're not already I usually save this for the end of the show. I'm going to say it now. For those of you who are on LinkedIn, if you're not connected to or following Stephanie on LinkedIn, please do. She regularly, the content that she provides, it's a broad scope of things. I've never seen her post anything that's not beneficial to the UX community. Please, please, please connect to Stephanie. In this day where misinformation is off the charts and people get connected to and they're not really offering any value, you got to find people that are going to present something of value. And Stephanie just always shares things. I don't get to see them all because of the terrible algorithms. And sometimes I found out there's an option on LinkedIn that you can actually not tag, but flag someone's account so that their content, you always see it. There's a way to do that. And so that's probably something I need to do so I don't miss anything. But every time I see stuff, Boom. Wow, this is great. Man, what a great tool. Man, what great insights. And these are the kinds of people that you want to connect to. Because there, we know there's a lot of loud people. And it's sad when somebody's loud and they're saying absolutely nothing. But unfortunately, it's quite common. But let's go ahead and dive in to our content today. We've got some set topics, and we may end up going off the beaten path and bringing up something else. That's fine, too. But let's dive in. And our first topic up for discussion today has to do with what I refer to, and these are my cue notes here, the muddied world of UX recruiting, the types of things that we have to deal with when you're looking for a job. The things you have to endure, the things you get exposed to, the barrage of ridiculous emails. So I know Stephanie's got some strong opinions and some things to share on that. Let's shine the light. Let's try to ease the frustrations that people are being exposed to. Then the way you do it is by reconciling it, by getting greater understanding. So let's dive into it. Stephanie, take it away regarding this topic.
Yeah. So yeah, we were talking about like the really, really strange and shitty offers we get and how it's kind of getting worse these days.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was sharing. I live in Luxembourg. It's quite a small country and a lot of people in the UX community, we know each other. So usually when we get an offer, if it's a good offer, we forward it to the other people. If it's bad, we screenshot it and ask friends, hey, did you get that one as well? And like recently, my partner got this offer. It was really, really bad. It was just a few lines about, I can read it like, hey, hope you are doing great. I do have a challenging role for you as a UI / UX designer in Belgium location. I came across your profile. It seems to be great fit to this role. What role? It's like, okay, to know more, feel free to contact me. And that's it. And the fun part is like, two different people from two different companies sent the exact same copy-pasted message to him. Like one of those sent it to me and I think a few other friends got it. It's like, you can't go more generic than that. It's like challenging role. What does it mean? It's like, okay. And then you are a great fit for this role. You could just like send it to anyone for any role. Hey, we're looking for a butcher. It's a challenging butcher role or something like that. Then when he I declined. And when I declined, the lady was all like, yeah, can you send me your resume so that if something comes up, I could send it to you. It's like, hell to the no. So there's this kind of trend where people, they're just trying to collect resumes. I was joking on LinkedIn about Pokemon, you got to catch them all. And it's basically that. Like, you know, you feel like a Pokemon. They're just throwing this little ball at you and they don't really care. It's like when I was playing Pokemon Go, you know, you catch them all and then at some point you don't have any space anymore. And then you take a look at the Pokemon you got and you remove the one that are not great. And I kind of things like that a little bit, just like throwing all those Pokeballs around and hoping someone will catch them. And the thing is, we are in Europe, so the reason they have to ask us for the resume, because like basically my resume is on LinkedIn. Anyone could take it and put it in their system if they wanted to. It would be really, really shady. I would be mad. But technically they can. There's an export to PDF on every LinkedIn profile, you know. But since this is Europe, they have to ask you like, hey, can I get your resume? It's like, no. So yeah, they are trying basically to fill in databases.
Yeah.
Which is quite annoying. And it's a little bit tricky at some point. Like even if you refuse, they ask you for something.
It's really sad. It's really sad. One of the things you just made me think about that stands out to that, a few things. I made a few notes here. Ambiguity. Here you are, especially when you are in the market for a job. Whether, you know, a lot of people are being laid off now, and I won't get into the details of that because that's shady. A lot of and some people are like, Darren, how can you say that? You'll hear me break it down later why I say that it's shady. I explained it to some people recently, but I won't get into it today because I'll go down a rabbit hole. But you're looking for a job. You're interested in a job. You need a job. You're anxious to get a job. You're passionate about getting a job. And then you get an email from somebody that says, hey, I got this great role. Completely ambiguous. You don't know what the role is. And I get calls like that. Hey, Darren, are you interested? Wow. Hi, Darren. How are you? And it's weird because you can tell they're all talking from like the same template. And hello, greeting, name, hello, Darren. Ask how you do. How are you doing today? It's all, and I'm sitting there like mouthing it out on the other side. They can't see me. I'm mouthing out what I know they're about to say because they're going to follow that script. And I've received like 1,000 of these calls before, so. You get, then they say, I have a job opportunity. Are you interested? Who in the world? You took the time to put together this ambiguous greeting or send this ambiguous email. Yeah. Then you talk to me about a job that, what is it, a janitor? I literally got a job offer one day or an inquiry, an email about a janitor role. Why are you writing to me as a UXer? I got this great opportunity as a janitor. Really? I never heard of a UX janitor. What is it? You know, I mean, it's just ridiculous stuff.
I got one from Facebook. They wanted me to be a JavaScript developer. And I was like,
wow. Yeah.
I know how to write alerts in JavaScript in the browser. And that's it. You don't want me to do JavaScript for Facebook.
Right.
Trust me. Right. And then I told the guy, like, no, look, I'm not interested. I don't do JavaScript. It's like, oh, if you ever learn, please reach out. It's like,
really?
I'm not going to learn. First, Facebook, I don't want to work for you. Then I'm not going to learn JavaScript to work for Facebook. This is like, maybe you could actually ask people who write JavaScript for a living, not exactly. Me. But
exactly.
It's like, how do I end up on those? It's like, HTML, CSS, yeah, sure, I can do that. JavaScript, come on.
You remind me of two things when you say that. One, there was a post this past week. I won't say who did it, but Debbie did actually rip the thing apart on her show on Friday. A person made a comment about, they said, first, if a job posting says UX, UI, that's not really a bad thing. I'm going, really? Okay, you don't think that hurts the discipline. You don't think that's an issue. You don't think that the company is schizo. You don't think that they don't know. You don't think they don't know what they want. Really? You think this is okay? And he goes on and say, yeah, because, you know, I had a job before and I got the code and my code wasn't great. That's all they needed was just me to generate some code, even if it wasn't that good. Why are you encouraging people to do a bad job? I mean, and the person posted this with like no shame, no concern, no nothing. And I'm like, yeah, and I did code and it wasn't great, but they didn't need anything great anyway. And I did this and it wasn't great. Oh, so you just told the whole world that you did a bunch of work and none of it was any good. Why are we satisficing? Why are you encouraging people to satisfice? There's enough fake it till you make it that's going on. And there's a dollar figure associated with fake it till you make it, folks. Why put forth effort to fake something when you could put forth less effort and do a great job? That's the weird thing about faking it. It takes more work than actually excelling at something. But you know, I don't want, that's another rabbit hole that I'll go down. But ambiguity is just, it's amazing. And I know, I have recruiters that I know. I have recruiters that I respect a great deal. Mm. And I feel for them because number one, when they're recruiting, they're between a rock and a hard place because the companies are not always communicating accurately. So you're trying to help them fill a role that they really didn't give you the information you needed to get the job done. Then on the flip side of that, you got these recruiters that are like, that are a curse to the discipline. And I'm not even in the discipline and I can see it, that they're very lazy. They don't want to do their job. I mean, you mentioned before we started recording about how they ask you, you're not interested. Do you have anybody else that you can recommend to the job? You know, like, okay, yeah.
Recommend me your friends.
Yeah. Like, I'm not going to do your job for you. If it's a viable job, yes. I believe you said this. If it's viable and I want to help my friends, yeah. Yeah, I know somebody who might be interested. But, you know, when you go back, most of the time, is that really the case? or are you really trying to? No, that most of the time they ask you about a job that you don't want. They present a job that's, it's completely ambiguous. You don't even know what the job is. Oh yeah, I want to recommend this ambiguous job to my friends. I mean, that's contradictory. If they're my friend, why would I want to, hey, you're my friend, I want to put some nails in your tire. Why would you do that? So it's really, yeah, the proposal is bad, and they make good recruiters look bad. Because then everybody, here's a recruiter, ugh, and you just tense up because you don't know what you're going to get from them, because 19 out of 20 recruiters you talk to, and that number is not an exaggeration, 19 out of 20 recruiters are like, are you getting paid to fill your database? Or are you
checking? I think some are, actually, you know. It's like, no, really, I'm not joking around. Like, I think some are paid by how many resumes they can gather and put into a database, which is a big problem, because then they do shady things like that. Like, hey, oh, give me your resume and we can recontact you. I was like, there's a company in Luxembourg, I'm not going to name it, but that's their specialty, you know. It's like, hey, we have this great offer, and they kind of give you enough information to maybe be interested. And then they're like, yeah, but if you want the name of the client, then you need to give me your resume. It's like, yeah, no, I'm not going to give you my resume to get more information about this job. It's like, first you give me the information, and then if I'm interested, I will give you my resume, you know. But it's like, oh, no, we don't do it like that in here. I was like, well, I happen to know someone who knows your boss. Maybe I can ask him, you know, if you don't do it like that. But
it's dark patterns. It's dark patterns in recruiting.
It's completely dark patterns. It's just, and I don't know if they're paid by the resume they put into their database, but it's, and then I think they recontacted me and a few other friends a month ago, because again, they were recruiting for a UX position somewhere in Luxembourg. And it was the same spiel, like, I have this position, but you need to give your, put the resume on our site if you want. So it's not even give the resume to the recruiter here. It's like, we have a recruiting site. We want you to put your information in there so that then they can say, look, we have that many candidates for IT jobs in Luxembourg. And then they will maybe give you some information about the client, because there's some client in Luxembourg, or I think there's some client in every country where word of mouth, you know, you don't want to work for them.
Right. Right.
It's like, basically you have friends, you have that, you know, like, I heard about that, and everyone goes, you know, like that face, like they just ate some really, really sour lemon, like that face. So this is where usually we try to have the name of the client pretty quickly when you have like people reaching out to you, because you don't want, that's the thing, you don't want to waste their time either. If it's like one of those clients where you clearly don't want to work for them, just give the name already, then we just don't continue. Because it's silly to go through a few rounds of interviews and then only then know the name of the client. It's like, oh no, by the way, I never want to work for them.
Right.
Which is kind of a big problem here, because a lot of people recruit for consulting agencies. And since there's competition between the consulting agency, they really try to keep the name of the client out of the conversation for as long as possible, which is, it's kind of a double-edged sword. It can be pretty quickly quite annoying as well. So,
yeah, you made me think about something else. And this is a variation even on what we're addressing here. This is sort of a heads up for those of you out there that are, I know people are, I'm trying to get a job. Sometimes when you're really, really, I'll say over eager, and it, that's not really a thing, but I'm saying it to make a point. When you're so eager, saying it more perfectly this time, when you're so eager to get a job that you turn off your critical thinking, you can put yourself in danger. Now you deserve to get a job. You deserve to be in the market to try to find a job. It's an honorable thing to be out and trying to find a position. That's all fantastic. But if you're so eager that you stop recognizing key issues, you could end up really being in trouble. And what I'm getting at is that there are people who the name of the game for them is identity theft. And they have found out that you can appear to be a recruiter.
yeah,
and steal someone's identity. Get the resume, get the social security number here in the States. I don't know what they use over in Europe, but that's the equivalent. Or maybe they do have something that's like
same kind of information.
So they want to get that information. The easiest way to get it is to talk to somebody who's anxious about a job. Well, I need your social security. I've talked to people before that I've given them. I mean, I haven't suffered anything, not yet. So I've gone down this road before, and I thought it was a really great opportunity. They threw a really big company name out there that I was interested in working with. They got all the information, and boom, ghosted. And who's to say they were legit? They just ran off with all my personal information.
Yeah.
Some people want, I've actually had my portfolio content stolen before. And somebody criticized me recently. He got a password on his portfolio. And here's the weird thing. The person who was complaining that I had a password in my portfolio was not a recruiter. They're not a UX veteran. They're an aspiring UX person that has been quote unquote freelancing for 5 years and nobody will hire them. And folks, please stop saying you're freelancing when you're not really freelancing. I've got to say that too. Don't fall for that thing that boot camps say. Well, you know, you can tell people that you're freelance until you get a job. And as soon as you say that, you're no longer eligible for that, for a refund from them because you find a job within X amount of time.
Yeah, you found the job.
So don't fall for that trick. But don't go out there saying you're a freelancer when you're not. Pardon, Stephanie?
Yeah, loopholes in those shitty contracts is usually easy to find.
Yeah. But beware, folks. Beware. Go ahead.
Yeah, so it's identity theft, but it goes way beyond that. I think I shared an article a few months ago, and I think Debbie also talked about it on her show, where there was some guy who pretended to be a whole company and started having designer work for him for free.
Yep.
And here they lost their time, which sucks, but they only lost their time. Recently I've seen someone posted on LinkedIn that some people said they were, I don't remember which big company, and they did this kind of scam where they ask you, okay, you're hired, it's really great, and then we're going to send you some computer stuff, but you need to put your credit card in this site, you buy it with that, and then the company is going to reimburse you, and it's just a scam. You never get the computers.
Wow.
And you lose like 2,000, 3,000, a lot of money on that, which is what's driving me nuts is at the moment, there's so many people looking and there's so many, sorry, but assholes trying to prey on people looking for a job with so many things like identity theft, fake offers just to scam you out of some monies and things like that. It's sad, but it's also becoming kind of super dangerous at some point. It's like, who can you trust? So the thing is, like, shitty recruiters, you can trust them, apparently.
And that's why it's important.
At least.
It's important. I mean, we had a conversation recently. Joel Barr has a thing he does now called Office Hours on Tuesday nights. And we had a discussion during that session. Really energetic, great conversation, especially for those that are new. Getting into UX, look up Joel Barr. That's another person that's worth following. And we were talking about the question came up, which recruiters do you recommend? I highly recommend that you build a database. Those of you out there that are going to be dealing with recruiters or even contracting houses, make sure that you identify ones that you're willing to deal with. Talk to your friends. Talk to people who are mentoring you. Talk to people. Who do you recommend? Who do you think is a good company to deal with? And then reach out to them. You reach out to them and get in the database. You reach out to them and apply. So then you're in the system. Now you've got the building of a relationship. And now you got somebody that's reaching out to you and you know it's not somebody who's a scam artist. I'm calling you from ABC Recruiting House. We want to hire you for this great job that's paying all this money. Don't you want to get it? Well, I need all your information. Then they run off with your information. Next thing you know, you got credit cards being opened in your name. That's what these people do. So identify reputable companies. If somebody reaches out to you, find out who they are. I mean, I can't tell you how many emails I get somewhere in the vicinity, a minimum of about 20 to 25 emails every week, Stephanie, from companies that I don't recognize. claiming that they're recruiting mm-hmm. for a UX position. And I'm like, okay, well, I can tell you're lazy because you haven't looked at my resume. You haven't looked at my LinkedIn profile. One time, and I'll write them back. And I'll say, please remove me from your company's database because you're lazy, obviously. And if I can't trust you to try to present a job that's actually viable, I'm not looking, but I like to know what's going on out there. I do that. But you just send me something ridiculous. Here's a contract job for 5 minutes. Why would I want to do that if I'm in a permanent role? this is ridiculous. So one day I said, please, I should put it somewhere and just copy and paste it. Give them a taste of their own medicine with the copy and paste.
I got that. I know that's the advice I would give to people. I have a Google Doc now, which is called Quick Answers. And I can just like copy paste. I don't know how many of those. And yeah, it's basically because I'm really bad at saying no and also at getting rid of people. But just by having like pretty finances, it makes it quite easy for this kind of things. Also for many things, like have a pretty financer with links to your resume portfolio in case someone actually interesting is contacting you. Then you can just like copy paste the whole thing, give them the information. So definitely.
Might as well.
Have a place where you can copy paste stuff from with all this information. It really, really helps.
Well, these guys, I don't want them contacting me again. So I send this message and all it says is, please remove me from your company's database. And that's it. And then I click the little spam thing. And Google doesn't even respond to that. I've actually sent recruiters messages, fake or just low profile recruiters messages. I've indicated that they're spam like 200-300 times, and Google the email still makes it to my inbox. So congrats Google for that wonderful execution on that. But one of them wrote me back once and they said, well, you need to take your name out of so-and-so and so, we won't contact you. Said and he talked about Dice. Said my information on Dice is not searchable. So and folks, don't fall for that little message on the bottom. Those companies, a lot of times, they'll have a link that says they're reaching out to you about a job, and then but yet there is something that indicates that it's something. There's something scammy, I shouldn't say scammy. There's something that's really off base about them writing you, because one of the last lines in the email will be, please unsubscribe if you don't want to receive these messages anymore. Since when do you get a message from a recruiter that has to do with a subscription? So if you click it, you know what happens? You don't get unsubscribed. You get more of the same.
Yeah, you confirm the email is legit.
So
I got that not with recruiters, but with people who want to put like links on my blog. They find my Maltem Consulting. So they found my company email. They even found my email at my clients.
Ooh.
So I had like people call me on my client's Skype trying to sell me stuff. I don't even know I had a number.
Oh my goodness. So
what they do is they call a reception and they ask to talk to me. And apparently reception is just like forwarded the calls and stuff like that. And so, it's messy because then once you get on those databases, the issue is that it's really, really hard to get removed because I'm not even sure on which database I am. I think a marketing one, but then they say, okay, this is, like your blog, and I think they have a database of all the way to contact me. The fun part is they also have super old emails. Like some people, they will copy paste all the email they have from me.
Yeah.
It's like, thank you for telling me what's in your database. But in Europe, you can say, please remove that PS GDPR, but often they don't really care. So it's kind of a big mess because at some point it even brings the noise. It's like maybe you are actually trying to find a job and then you get all those these kind of noisy things where you get your hopes up and we're like, oh, maybe that's something interesting. Then you waste time replying and stuff like that. So it's even worse. Like if you have to deal with all the noise plus the actual recruiters that you want to go with because they have like something that is actually interesting, that's a lot.
It's amazing stuff. I click subscribe. I get added to more stuff. That person that I mentioned, when I let them, I replied, since they decided to chastise me, they blame me for them contacting me. I said, I've written your company specifically over 10 times and I'm still in your database. I've had people say, yes, we'll do that. I'm still in your database. I've clicked the subscribe or the unsubscribe link before. I'm still in your database. Take me out of your database. So it's really bad. They're not really, I mean, those companies, even if they did have something of note, a lot of times you're not going to get it. And I even went to work for a similar company. They're not like those, but I went to work for a similar company once. And I love something you said before we started recording too. And I've got it typed in here as a quote. They don't really care. I mean, it's so important. That's why building relationships with recruiters so that they know who you are and they can deal with you as a human being and not as a number, really getting into their wheelhouse so they really care about you and you can see validation that they care about you. I cannot tell you how important that really is. And the best relationships I've ever had, whether I was a hiring manager or a person trying to find a job, it comes out of building relationships with recruiters. It's so invaluable. They've got to care. You've got to see that they care, because when they're just reaching out to you, yeah, I have a job for you. Do you want it? They don't care about you. And no. you are in crosshairs. You have to remove yourself out of the recruiter's crosshairs. And I do mean that as a metaphor of they're going to take you out some kind of way. You have to transition that into a human a relationship, a going back and forth. We're going to have dialogue. You're going to understand who I am. You're not going to just search for me, find a keyword, and then try to engage with me off of a keyword. That's not a genuine relationship, and it's not going to help you. Don't be so desperate for a job. Don't be so eager for a job. Again, you turn off your critical thinking because you will suffer for it in the long run. Mm.
Yep. I had a tip for that, but it's not very accessible. But at some point in my LinkedIn name, I had a special character, which was a little, I don't remember, triangle or something. I removed it because screen reader would read it. But then the thing, if you have something strange or a typo or something, is then you can spot pretty quickly the automated messages, because yes, they will just like take LinkedIn name. And then when you see something like, hey, Stephanie Walter, little icon, you know, like, oh, you're not a human. Yeah, you're a human being, but this message was automated. So, but yeah, the issue is, yeah, for accessibility, it's not great, because then whenever someone will read the page with a screen reader, they will kind of read the emoji next to your name. So I still need to find a way to find a new way to do that,
yeah,
which would be accessible and kind of still would tell me pretty quickly that this is an automated message, but that can help, because then you know that if someone took the time to actually write your name by hand and not just like use something automated, you already know that maybe this relationship will be more investing time into, because they consider you as a human being and, as you said, not as a number that they can put into their database or something.
Yeah. You remind me of how on LinkedIn, I'm Darren Hood, and then I have initials after my name, representative of, I've got 2 master's degrees, and I've got an NNG certification, which, by the way, has never done anything for me in my career, but I didn't pay for it. So, but when I get an email that says, "Dear Mr. Hood, MSIME,
yeah,"
then I know something's wrong, because you know that's not anybody's name. But they do it anyway. And I'm like, no, this is bad. Nothing good will come of this. And I will say this, and we'll move on to the next topic, unless you have another comment on this. When people do that, when recruiters do that, and again, making good recruiters look bad, is very disrespectful. It's very demeaning when you take somebody and reduce them to like a boilerplate. You know, they've done weird things with your name, or they spell something wrong, or they address something.
They misgender you.
Yes.
That's happened to a friend of mine who had to tell 3 times their pronoun. Ooh. And then the guy kept on using the wrong ones. Like, dude, I don't want to work for you or with you.
When a recruiter disrespects you, you know you don't want a relationship with them. You know, and it is a relationship, whether it's good or bad. And if you've ever had a bad relationship, which I'm sure practically everybody has, don't enter into another one because you get in touch with a bad recruiter or they get in touch with you. So we're gonna shift to the next topic. And I've got it documented here as recruiting and education. So go ahead and take that one away, Stephanie.
Recruiting and education. It's about educating recruiters about what's UX and UI and things like that so they stop doing mistakes, but also about helping them understand what they're looking for in an actual kind of UX position or something.
Yep.
Because as you said, like sometimes the recruiters, they have to deal with company who don't know really what they need. And then they are supposed to do kind of a advisory role where they say, look, I know you want this and this in the profile, but we will never find someone with all of those qualifications because you're basically looking for free people here. So maybe we should focus on that and that, which is there's a lot of things to do, I think, in this topic about making sure that recruiters understand what's a UX designer, what's a UX researcher, what's a UI designer, what do we do on a daily basis? Otherwise, we will keep on getting offers that ask us to do HTML and CSS for research jobs where you don't really need to do HTML and CSS for a UX researcher job or something like that. Yep. So, yeah.
Yeah. You remind me of something when you said that. I thought of there are times because the recruiter doesn't understand. Let me back up. There are scenarios where the company doesn't understand. The recruiter doesn't understand, and then you apply and you get into this whirlpool where you don't know that nobody doesn't understand and then you get hired and then you're posting to LinkedIn, oh, celebrate with me, I got a new job, and you have no idea what's lying ahead because you don't know that nobody understands anything. And I remember I had a job once and I thought everybody understood. And hey, this, I'm saying this. So nobody's exempt from this. I go into a meeting and everybody is talking about what we're going to do with this project and how we're going to help drive value on the project. And I make a statement and everybody sits there and they look at me like I'm from another planet. And then I looked at the responses I was getting. I didn't say anything wrong. Nobody knew what I was talking about. And it's like, nobody. And then I found out. I'm like, okay, well, I'm here now. But I need to do some digging. And I found out my boss was fantastic. One of the best bosses I've ever had. How, unfortunately, the company was completely in disarray when it came to UX. Yeah. I found out that my job, and I've told this story before, my job was born out of the CEO walking into the CTO's office. Hey, well, I think we need somebody to look after our website. You agree? Yeah. Okay. Boom. Less than 30 seconds. If a job got birthed out of a conversation that took less than 30 seconds and neither of them knew what UX was, because they said that, but then the CTO realized that they needed a UX person that was going to be responsible for their website. Okay, I've done that before. I've been there before. No big deal. But then we have other products that I can help contribute to as well. That's I got pulled into that meeting. But basically, nobody knew anything about UX. So, and not only them, but the team members didn't know anything about UX. And they knew that I was a new person, but when I came in there talking about UX, nobody knew what I was talking about. So you can go into a company, it's not the only time it's happened to me in my career either, sad to say, where you go in, you get baited, you can get baited and switched. You thought that you interviewed for one thing because that's what the job posting said. They talked about that during the job interview. And then when you sat down to do your work, and they gave you your work, you after 2 months, you never got anything to do that was reflective of what you thought you got hired for. These are things that exist, folks. These are things that are happening, which is why a lot of people, and we remind people about this all the time, you're being interviewed, but you're also interviewing them. You have to make sure to ask the right questions. you have to be willing to ask questions that you might get an answer to that's going to disappoint you. But would you rather be disappointed during the interview process, or would you be rather be disappointed after you're there? Now, some people will say, well, you can disappoint me all you want when I'm getting paid. Think about that. Think about that and be more honest. Do you really want to get hired for something that you don't want to do? Something that you don't find any pleasure in? Oh, I got to pay the bills, Darren. Yes, you do. Which is why you want to find something more suitable. Because if you stay there for 2 months and then you're gone, are you going to be able to pay the bills then? So find something.
It will also not look good on your resume as well.
No.
But the thing is, sometimes you can, I think if you're a senior, you know, you can do something, maybe kind of mitigate the damage in such situation, trying to kind of help them and say, okay, it's not what I thought it was going to be. I'm going to try to do my best.
Yeah.
Bring the maturity level a little bit higher or something like that. If you're a senior. But I see that happen often to junior, which is exactly that. Like the company decided they needing one of those UX, UI something because Gartner or whatever, they read a blog post, they have no idea what the person does. And then you have this junior who get hired because usually it's such company, they don't have a budget for a senior, even mid-year. It's usually kind of small budget. So it ends up with juniors who just are fresh out of school, and we have them, we see a lot of those people in mentoring sessions, also sometimes on the Delta CX community, where they're like, I was promised that at the interview, none of this is happening, what shall I do? And then you're like, as a senior, you could maybe bounce back, but as a junior, it's really, really hard to say, yeah, look, trust me, we can do something with the maturity, and maybe we could do that and that. So for me, that's kind of the trickiest part is if you're an engineer into such a position, you're super happy that you found your first job. But at some point, if you're not doing what you wanted to do, then it kind of brings you backwards. You know, it's like waste of time you could have used with another company. And it's kind of a big problem at the moment, which is like super low maturity, but also UX/UI, I hate that, but it's became a buzzword. So company know they kind of need us to do something, but some are not really aware of what the something should be.
You made me think about something there too. If you're a junior UX person, and you're interviewing with a company and it looks promising, make sure you inquire about the structure of the team. Because, you know, some people, you don't know what questions to ask at a certain point in time. One of the questions that you can always present, how is your team currently structured? How many people are on your team? How is the team currently structured? Because you're probably going to be interviewing with whoever the manager is, but a lot of companies hire folks to run their UX departments that don't know what UX is. So if that's the case, you want to know about that too, because you're not just trying, you can't just try to get a job. You have to try to, you're managing the trajectory of your career. So for that reason, yes, I would like to get a job, but I want to know how viable this really is. Because if you go in and there's no senior, who's going to mentor you? Because the best mentor is the one you have at work. Who's going to mentor you at work? Who's going to groom you at work? Are they just going to bring you in and just throw work at you? I mean, you remember at the carnival, they have the person that's sitting on the thing and people are throwing the balls. And if they hit the ball, then the person falls into the pool of water. Yeah. When you go into a company and that's, you don't have any seniors that you can support, anybody that can help groom you, anybody that can guide you and direct you, somebody who actually knows what in the world is going on. If you don't have that, that's really the metaphorical position that you're in. You are sitting, hey, I'm here for work. Okay, please go and sit up there. What am I going to be doing? Oh, you just wait until somebody hits the thing and knocks you in the water, because that's all you're going to do all day. It's the equivalent. So you have to not just get a job, but make sure that job is a building block. Make sure that job is going to set you up for future success. Make sure that job is going to help you to grow. See, and there's not only, and I talk about this a lot, and I've got a workshop on this too, and we'll hopefully deliver it in a not too distant future. I did it at a former employer in its rough form, but personal UX maturity, there's that. There's not just organizational UX maturity. There's discipline-wide UX maturity, and we suck as a discipline right now because of what a lot of people are doing. There's organizational UX maturity. In past companies, I have assigned UX maturity levels to projects, to departments, and to individual stakeholders because it helps me to understand what I need to do in order to manage that work. But you, as an individual, you are also, you have a personal UX maturity level. And if you, what you, the work you end up doing, the people you end up working with are going to determine whether that is going to go up or down. And Stephanie just mentioned it. You'll set yourself back. I got a job. Yeah, you got a job, but where are you going? Are you going up or are you going down? And if you're already at the bottom, you can't afford to go down too much. That shouldn't be up for discussion, but that's what a lot of people are doing. So you want to find out how many people are here. Okay, we got there's four people on the team. And then usually when you ask that, they'll tell you who's on the team and they'll tell you the experience level of each of those people. Good. I need to know that. I went to work for a company once and they said, Darren, I want to bring you in so you can be a senior to my seniors. I'm like, okay, that sounds interesting. That sounds like something I'd like to do. But then after I got in there and I started looking around, I found out, did she have this conversation with them?
Ouch.
Because you wanted to bring me in to be a senior to the seniors, but they had no desire to engage. And a lot of people in UX today do suffer from inferiority complexes. That was the company that I worked at. I don't know if you heard me tell the story or not, Stephanie, where I delivered my talk on emotional intelligence. And the equivalent of a riot ensued at the end because I had everybody take a quick test for mind tools. So you get a quick high-level gauge of where you are from an EQ standpoint. And people were getting really terrible scores. And they were mad about it. And then they found out that my score was off the charts. And it was almost, I think the top score on that is 75. And my score was like a 72 or 73. They went nuts. They began to protest. They began to yell and scream. They just screamed for the whole rest of the presentation about anything that they possibly could. That's what trolls do. So, and even when I shared, okay, if you want to learn more about EQ, if you want to get better with your EQ, here's a list of books that I recommend that you could check out. Well, if I click on that, are you going to get a kickback from Amazon? I mean, they just, you know, these kind of people, they get intellectually and emotionally and cognitively violent. For absolutely no reason. I'm delivering this topic to help you. You just saw my score. You need to, it's time for you to grow. Not for me to, you know, attacking me is not going to help you. And so folks need to be aware of that. And I learned something about that team and it wasn't too much longer after that I had to get out for my own sanity. I had to get out of that organization because people were not going to let you work and you need to understand what the team is like. It's one thing to get a job, but please know and understand there are a lot more moving parts than what you think there are when you come into a company. So you had to, and if you're at the beginning of your career, you got to learn about it. Here I am 27 years in, 40 years in from a corporate America standpoint. And I'm still learning things. So there's always something to learn. There's always something new that's happening. And the job is one thing. The discipline is another thing. But there's, again, all these moving parts. And you part of managing your career is understanding these things and knowing how you have to navigate around them.
Yeah, that's the thing. But then I think another solution, if you're a junior and then they don't have another designer or a mentor, you can ask them to pay for one. Like I did that. I was basically paid by a company to help their junior who didn't, she was the only one in the company, only designer. And then, yeah, that's the kind of thing you can do as well. So I'm not saying if there's no other designer or no mentor, it's going to be a bad situation. But I think there's ways to mitigate that.
Yes.
If you can find some people who can act as mentors, even if they're not exactly in the design, they can still mentor you on other things if you're a junior. And then if you need a design mentor, someone to talk to, I think it's perfectly fine to say to the company, look, at some point, I will need someone to help me grow. If you can't provide that, could we kind of arrange that you pay for mentorship? Or there's also a lot of free mentorship programs. I know in France, there's one specific one for women in tech, things like that. So if you can find, like, at some point, some people to help you, I would just say, if possible, don't pay it for yourself. Really try to have the company pay it for for you, because otherwise, like, you make money, but then you have to pay out of your own pockets because they don't have any other designer. So it's a little bit tricky.
That's a really smart approach.
User Wizard. Solutions at some point.
Yeah, I think User Wizard is in Switzerland, and that's a pay mentor service, but they do phenomenal work. We were having a session with Debbie one day, and we were just suggesting to people that if you're in a situation where you don't have seniors, and thank you for going there with that. If you don't have a senior, it doesn't mean that you can't take the job there. It doesn't mean not to take the job there, but you still need to know what's going on so you can navigate the waters. So another option is if you connect to a strong UX community, you can actually get a lot of insights that will help you at work. We have the UX Chit Chat Hour. That is, we meet monthly. People come there for mentoring advice. You got Amy Santee, who does things to help people from a career standpoint, and she's doing some mentoring. There are people. I am not, no, ADP list, no. Just so you know, no. No, I do not support them. They're in it for themselves, and the people in charge are trolls, and they're just trying to make a name for themselves. They don't really care about the discipline. I'm saying it, don't care. But you have people out there that do care. You have people out there that will help you. And if you don't have it, while you're connecting to these strong communities and you're getting more and more information and learning more and more, because you can bring those in a mentor community, you can bring up that specific item that you need insights about. Whereas if you're getting UX education, even a degree program, the stuff that you get from mentors is not being discussed in degree programs at all. Just so you know, I mean, I tell my students, and I'm about to start teaching at two more universities here real soon. I tell my students the things that you don't normally get from the content, because I want my students to be, to be equipped. So I want people to be strong. I want people to be successful. And you're not going to get there if your head is in a book. It's always that. It doesn't matter what discipline you're in. This is not just UX. There's always something that's not covered in the books that's critical to how you need to achieve success in that particular field. So I give my students those types of things. I mentor people myself, but I do it in quite a different way than other people do, because I can't risk failing to manage my own time because I'm helping you. So I set up something that's more, hey, I'm posting this information, tap into it. I've got this talk over here, tap into it. You have questions, I will answer those. I'm going to start talking about sending out a newsletter here. I'm talking about starting a bi-monthly mentoring session on Saturdays. So where people can just come, show up, and we'll answer your questions. We'll do all of that stuff. That stuff is needed. You shouldn't have to pay for it. Sometimes you will, but sometimes you don't have to. There are resources that are available. Tap into them, but just keep moving yourself forward. That's what I
saw some Twitter circle also. I need to remember. I'm sorry, I forgot the name who was doing that. It's completely random. Like, I opened Twitter and there was someone doing kind of a chit chat and not circles. What's the name? Like, on Twitter, you can have audio chat now with descriptions and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
And it was basically like you tune in, you listen, and then she was like, yeah, if anyone has a question or wants to share something at work, it's a safe place. And it was really, really cool because you had like people who came with actual problems they had at work, like real life problems, and then just discussing and bouncing ideas. So it was really, really casual. And I need to find out who it was. So yeah, there's a lot of places where you can just like, either it's audio or like forums or Slack communities. Or I don't remember the name of the tool you use for your community, Darren.
Oh, I use Engage. Well, I use AirMeet for the UX Chit Chat Hour.
Engage.
We have a private UX community called Engage. I don't talk about it a lot on the show. Don't know why. We're still trying to get it. I think people are, you know, they're going to LinkedIn, they're going to Twitter, they're going here, they're going there. They don't think about going over to this. Mighty Networks is the company behind it. We call it Engage. We're trying to keep it going. A group of people tried to help resurrect it with me, and let's keep this thing going forward. It's very difficult to do that. So we just have to keep trying. We'll keep trying it, and we could do the mentoring there. We could run it through there. We'll come up with ways to do it, but I just want to help people out because there are so many people out here that will tell you, I saw a person that was on Instagram offering UX mentoring. This person had 3 months of experience, and it wasn't even 3 months. They had been saying they'd been involved for 3 months. They really didn't have 3 months of experience. So there's a lot of people. There's some people, they have 3 years of experience. And sometimes, do they have something to share? They do. But I come across a lot of people that have minuscule experience, but they present themselves as someone that has like 5 or 10 times the experience than they actually have. That's dangerous for you. So when you come across somebody who's mentoring, saying that they will be your mentor, make sure you go to LinkedIn and check out their profile to see who they really are. And I said this, I think, last week, and I'll say it again. Sometimes you'll come across people and it looks like they have a lot of experience and they've only worked at one company. Now, if you've been at a company and you have that longevity, fantastic. But please know and understand that if a person has only worked at one company, their viewpoints are going to lack the diversity that you may need in order to really vault you forward. If they've worked at Microsoft, they've only worked at Microsoft, then all they have to offer you is pretty much a Microsoft point of view. If they worked at Facebook and they've only worked at Facebook, then they really only have a Facebook point of view to offer you, and so on and so forth. I don't care what the company is. If that is, you know, is a person that they've been at 3 or 4 companies, they're going to have a more diverse viewpoint and more likely to be able to impact a broader number of people. I have heard people with the narrow points of view say things that are absolutely dangerous to other people, that if you listen to them, and here's the problem. When people see the big names, they see the Microsofts, they see the Googles, they see these big names, and they go, oh, what do you have to say, oh, great one? Nothing. They don't have anything to say. They worked at the big name company, and you don't work at the big name company. So unless you work at that same big name company, the value simply isn't there. So please know, understand, and keep those things in mind, because you will get more valuable information. And when you turn off your critical thinking, you're susceptible to whatever these people are offering up. So don't do that. You're listening to me and Stephanie. Make sure that you got your critical thinking hat on. Never take your critical thinking hat off for anybody, because when you do, everything comes in. Your filter is now gone. Your antenna is down, and you will accept anything. And I see people accepting any and everything, that, and that's not going to help you grow. It's not going to help you achieve success. And I'm sure you want success, or you wouldn't be listening to this show. So that's, folks, that's it. That's we're about to run out of time here. So thank you, Stephanie, for taking the time to join me on today. And we're shorter than some of the other ones. It's my fault because I've got to run halfway across town. So we got to wrap up here. But thank you, Stephanie.
Do you want to tell them why? Because I can't see the shirt, but I see it and it's amazing.
I made a huge mistake. I apologize to Stephanie. I made a huge mistake and I signed up for I think I have something to do on Saturday, but I made a big mistake and I had it on my spreadsheet and didn't put it in my calendar, and I'm going to a bowling clinic. So I'm going to learn how to get more, for those of you who understand bowling, more revs. They're going to teach me how to be more accurate and to get more revs. So more revs is short for revolution. So I'm a former professional bowler, for those of y'all who didn't know that. And so I want to get better. I want to get better at everything. If I'm touching it, my rule is, if you're touching it, excel at it. I've already operated at professional level status, but I want to get better. I want to be better. And bowling, it reminds me of UX. You never stop growing. You never stop improving. And like in bowling, if you do something bad because of muscle memory, My new job, they said, hey, you come to town, maybe they knew I like bowling, maybe we can all go bowling. I think this is relevant and people will get this UX metaphor I'm about to mention. We can all go bowling. I said, well, I can't. Well, why is that? I said, because I won't have my equipment with me. But can't you just get a bowling ball from off the rack and some shoes? No, because actually people don't know this. Those shoes you get at the bowling alley, when you go to actually buy bowling shoes, if the pro shop you're going to, I mean, you can go to a sporting goods shop or you can go to Amazon and they'll ship you anything because you want to buy it. If you go, but if you're serious, you have to go to what's called a pro shop. And the pro shop will say, are you right-handed or left-handed? Why? Because if you're right-handed, you stop on your left foot. If you're left-handed, you stop. Your last step is a slide stop. You slide and then you put your heel down and you stop. So if you're right-handed, you need your left foot, your left shoe has to be structured a certain way. When you go to the bowling alley, those shoes are like ambidextrous shoes, for lack of a better word. I don't know the correct term, but they're identical. So we call those ice skates because they both slide. All they're meant to do is to match the size of your foot. That's it. But after that, and that's why you see people in open bowling, some of you who have been open bowling, that's why I felt like that. Yes, because they gave you a pair of pseudo ice skates. And because they don't know what you're going to be doing, and you're not really, you don't really know what you're doing a lot of times. So there's no telling what foot you're even going to stop on. So that's why they do that. And so I can't rent those because those aren't my shoes. I can't just grab a ball off the rack because those balls aren't drilled for me. And do you know that bowling is actually dangerous? You could actually get injured easily. Bowling, yeah, and if you grab, you did?
Yeah, years ago in Germany, I got stuck, and then I
oh my goodness,
my fingers like if you, I'm bad at that.
If you grab a ball,
I should not do.
If you grab a ball that doesn't fit, and if it doesn't fit, you will then what you will do is when you go into the backswing, your hand clenches automatically. So you'll grab the ball with your hand and you got two fingers and a thumb inside the ball. Usually most people, 99% of people, you'll grab the ball. So now you're putting strain on your forearm. Not to mention the fact this ball is going to pretty much fly off your hand, or what you just said is going to get stuck because it's not drilled for you. When you get a real ball, they measure your fingers. They measure your thumb. And then now that ball fits you. So now you can roll it and it comes off of your hand the right way. And I know Stephanie can see my video, folks on the listening. You can't see that your hand actually, it's almost like a yo-yo. Some of us remember having a yo-yo as a kid. That's actually the proper movement for the wrist. When the ball is coming off your hand, if you do that in slow motion, that's what's happening to your hand when you release it. So anyway, I can't bowl with you when I come to Chicago because I won't have my equipment. I don't go anywhere without five bowling balls. What? Yeah. So anyway, but here's what I said all that to say, where you get the UX metaphor. If you do something wrong, if you do something that you shouldn't be doing, it can take up to 10,000 repetitions to correct it. 10,000. For those of you out here, I talked to somebody recently. Hey, do you think that I could go to the Google? What do you think about the Google UX certificate program? I said, no, you don't want to do that. Some people think it's a good start. You can do other starts that are more viable, more trustworthy, and you don't even have to spend any money to do it. So why spend the money? Why? Because when you expose yourself, whether it's the Google program, not picking on Google, whether it's a Google program, whether it's somebody else is spreading misinformation. Somebody told me the other day, maybe we should approach this UX UI thing differently. Maybe we can say something different to get the message across. And I said, why should we kowtow? Why should we change what we're doing just because they're doing the wrong thing? when you start to go down the wrong street, when you start to do the wrong thing, here's your metaphor. When you start to embrace something that you probably should have rejected, when you start to practice or move your body in a way that it shouldn't move, do you realize you have to spend time unlearning it? Do you realize that it takes energy, time, effort to offset the thing that you expose yourself to? So 10,000 repetitions, if I grab that ball and start grabbing every time when I pick up my own equipment, guess what I'll start doing in my backswing? I'll start grabbing because I taught my muscles to do it. And it's going to take up to 10,000 repetitions to eliminate that from my game. I don't have time to do that. My score is going to come down. I'm going to start letting my team down. I don't want to do that. Do you want to let your UX team down because you expose yourself to misinformation? Do you want to let your clients and your companies down or damage the perception of the discipline or the value associated with the discipline of UX because you started getting around the wrong people? Somebody said, oh, this great person, he did such a great talk at this conference the other day. I saw it this morning when I woke up and looked at LinkedIn. Yeah, but that guy's a troll. And I know that if I go and listen to that talk, which I don't want to do because I know how he is, And if you go and you listen to this person, you're going to hear something that's going to get in your system, and now you got to work to get it out. So no, the person's a troll. I don't care what he talked about. If he said something worth grasping, somebody else that's not risky is saying the same thing. I don't need to go and listen to him. So you don't want to, if you want to grow in UX, if you want to go the right way, you're going to need to make sure that you are always keep your critical thinking hat on. Make sure you're evaluating what you come in contact with and start to lay aside things that are contrary or not really going to be helpful. Don't just embrace something because you think it's taking you forward. Just go pick up a viable book and that'll take you forward. You don't have any issues, but don't be the bowler, the equivalent to the bowler. That's using all the
you need to the do an article on that.
I mean, yeah,
UX and bowling. Because it's a good metaphor, actually.
Yeah,
it's a good metaphor.
It is. Yeah. I mean, for somebody who knows, I know if you don't know about bowling and you go bowl, you aren't hurting anything. It's the point at which you begin to learn. It's the point at which you begin to understand what's the right way. It's bowling is normally a 4-step approach, maybe 5. You can augment it and maybe you could do 6. But if you're right-handed, you stop on your left foot. If you're left-handed, you stop on your right foot. You follow through. You look, there's arrows, there's dots, there's 39 boards from 1 to 39, from right to left. People don't even realize all of these things. There's a release point, there's a target, there's a break point. There's so much. It's such a technical thing. Sound familiar? So is UX. And the more you learn about it, the more you need to pay attention to those things and get better at it so you can not only benefit yourself, not only get a job, so you can benefit the discipline, right? So you can benefit, don't just benefit you, benefit the discipline. And because we're still in our infantile stages, actually, you're talking approximately 20 years, and there's a bunch of people that today that still don't know what UX is. I talked to somebody yesterday that said that their CTO, I think it is, their chief technical officer, doesn't believe in UX and scrapped the entire UX team because he doesn't like UX, so he just eliminated the whole team.
Oh, gosh.
And that company's about to kiss their profitability goodbye because for every dollar you invest, up to $250 in return, he nicks the entire experience design team just because he doesn't believe in UX. So he's been exposed to somebody who misrepresented the discipline.
Yeah.
And that's what happened.
That's a dangerous thing.
He's probably been exposed to some of the people who are like faking it out there, faking it till they make it, and they cost him something and he didn't like it. So now that costs these 5, 6, or 7 people their jobs. That's why you got to, all of you out there, you impact the discipline. You're important to the discipline. How you proceed is critical to all of our success, not just yours. Not just yours. So, but again, thank you for taking the time to be with me again today on Stephanie. Any parting words for the audience today?
No, if you have fear of missing out of my LinkedIn post, I also put them on the blog every week. So
excellent.
You can get them back there as an archive. So
fantastic. Yeah. Okay, folks. So Stephanie, if you missed her post, go to her blog and then you can get the information, dynamite information that she shares out there. You got to connect with Stephanie Walter, who the German. talking to today.
Thanks a lot.
So, folks, that's all the time we have for today. I got to run off to my clinic so I can be a better bowler. So, again, thank you to our guest, Stephanie Walter. We'll have another guest on next week. Until next time, this is Darren Hood, the host of The World of UX, signing off. Happy UXing, everybody.
Thanks for joining us for this session of CX of M Radio. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the show, and visit cxofm.org for more resources.
RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.